Is to order. Today's Monday, March 10th. The time is 3:34 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator McGuire, Senator Fairclough, and Senator French, as well as myself, Chair Giesel. Senator Machicki will be along shortly. Senator Bishop was stranded in Fairbanks due to some flight issues, and he's on his way and in the air, so he won't be able to call in today, unfortunately. Recording Secretary Ann Krekelberg, thank you, Ann, and Juno LIO Claire Gross, thanks, Claire, and also my staff, Lindsay Williams. So today we have a committee substitute for HB 77. Mr. Vice Chair, do I hear a motion?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 77, version 28-GH1524/H is our working draft.
Thank you. Is there objection? Hearing none. Before us then is HB 77 version H hotel. So I'm going to start out by having my staff, Lindsay Williams, walk us through the changes between version H and the previous version, which was Y, Yankee. So Lindsay, if you would go ahead and take us through that. Now, you gave us also, I think, a chart, am I correct, of the changes?
Yes, Madam Chair, there is a chart that I'm working off of, basically an internal document. The Department of Revenue has, Department of Natural Resources has prepared a much more thorough document that lists the changes between Y and H.
All right, well, I'll let you introduce yourself for the record and then proceed.
My name is Lindsay Williams, staff to Senator Giesel and the Senate Resources Committee. So before you, you have working draft H. We'll begin in section 1 on page 1, line 11. Notwithstanding any other provision of law was removed from this draft, it was replaced instead with a clause that removes potential conflicts with three applicable title provisions in 38. Those provisions can be found on page 2, lines 17, and those are AS 3804, AS 3805, and AS 3895. Throughout Section 1, the commissioner was also changed to the department.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Williams, pause for one moment. Committee members, we're going to hold questions.
Okay, that's my question.
Yes.
Yep. First question is, when do I get to ask questions?
Right, exactly. Okay. I'm going to have Ms. Williams go through the
walk
bill,
through it,
and then DNR is going to come forward, and we're going to hit them with questions.
Very fine.
Okay,
very
great. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Section 1 restricts general permits to be used only for activities that the department can already authorize through a permit under AS 3805 and AS 3895 or regulations adopted under those statutes. This then eliminates leasing, easement, material sales, and other provisions of Title 38. Page 2, line 2, staying with Section 1, following significant and was replaced with the word or, so that permits may only be issued if they are unlikely to result in significant or irreparable harm to state land or resources. Lines 3 through 10 on page 2 add additional language that spell out the requirements for public comment on proposed general permits. The comment period must not be less than 30 days. The department shall make available to the public a written decision issuing the general permit. The decision to issue a general permit is appealable under AS 443711. However, a decision not to issue a permit does not require a written decision, and that is not appealable. Page 2, lines 11 through 15. As I stated before, the original decision is appealable, but not the subsequent lawful use of the general permit once it is established. Public notice is not required for subsequent activity under the general permit. Moving on to Section 2, which is still on page 2. This is a change that was made throughout the document. Following the word commissioner, used to be a phrase not later than. It was replaced with the word within. This is a stylistic change that was recommended by our legislative legal team to conform with the Manual of Legislative Drafting. In Section 4, on page 7, line 11, Following the word may, you find the word within again. It was the same change as mentioned before. Section 5, which is also on page 7, line 29. Following the word reconsideration, the word within replaced the words not later than. And also in section 6, which is on page 8, line 6, following the words to the court, the word within replaced the words not later than. Section 7, which is on page 8, deals with AS 3805-035, which are the powers and duties of the director. The preference right provision applicability was narrowed to state land leases issued competitively under AS 3805-070. In the previous version, language could have been construed to pertain to oil and gas mineral leases. On line 13, the word valid replaced the word active so that it now reads valid municipal entitlements. Also on line 13, changes made last year to AS 3805-035 changed the lettering in this section. The lettering used to read letter L, it now reads letter P. Staying on page 28, lines 21 through 24, a new sentence was added to address the preference right. The sentence is, an application for a preference right under this section must be filed with the director within 120 days after notice to the lessee of the municipal land. Pardon me, Madam Chair.
Pardon me, you had said on page 28, and I was just letting Senator Dyson know it was actually still on page 8.
Thank you for the correction, Madam sure. Chair. We're still on page 8, lines 21 through 24. So I left off, lessees of the municipal entitlement land selection if the director grants the preference right. Staying on page 8, line 30, the word avoided was added after the word be. And page 8, line 30 through page 9, line 2, clarifies how the municipal entitlement would be affected by a granted preference right. If the preference right application is approved, the amount of land withheld, the amount of land within the overall municipal entitlement under AS 296510 through 296530 shall be reduced by the amount of land covered under this section. And page 9, line 2. The funds transferred to the municipality are subject to appropriation. This relieves any concern with creating a dedicated fund.
Staying excuse me, Ms. Williams, pause for one moment. Let the record reflect Senator Machicki has joined us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Staying on page 9, line 3, land selection was added after the word entitlement. And in lines 5 through 6 on page 9, the definition of building was modified to add a size constraint of not less than 500 square feet. Now we'll go to section 12, which is on page 11. It deals with AS 3805075, which are leasing procedures. Page 11, line 17. This was another one of those stylistic changes. Following the word made, the word within replaced the words not later than. And the old section 13, which in version Y used to be on page 11, line 16, was removed. Stylistic edits suggested by our legislative legal team resulted in these changes being deleted, and so subsequent sections were renumbered accordingly. Section 13, page 12, line 10, following the word made, you'll find the word within that replaced the words not later than. And again on section 14, the same change in line 29, the word within at the beginning of 29 replaced the words not later than. Moving on to section 22. Deals with AS 38-5010, and that is authorization. So page 16, line 17. The word to was deleted and instead inserted the words that would at the beginning of line 17. This was a stylistic change, not a substantive change. On line 27, you'll find the word within following AS 3850-140, and that, again, replaced the words not later than. Moving on to section 26 on page 17, line 31. Following the word review, you find the word within again, and that replaced the words not later than. Following the word days, the word after replaced from. This was another stylistic change that was made by our legislative legal drafter. In section 34, which is found on page 20, line 16, following reconsideration, to a person was made singular. It used to read persons. This also was a non-substantive change that was made for uniformity. Section 36 is the next section, found on page 21, lines 8 through 9. Section 36 is AS 15. 133, it deals with notices and objection. After the word removal, a clause was added when the commissioner determines that the proposal or application is ready for a decision. Basically, the commissioner doesn't have to prepare a notice of application for sale, appropriation, or removal until the application is ready for a decision. It would be inappropriate for the commissioner to move forward with the notice until appropriate application and necessary data are available to begin the adjudication process. Staying on page 21, line 12, after the word that, you'll find the word within again. That replaced the words not later than. Again, a non-substantive change. Then, in version Y, old section 42 was found on page 22, line 11. This section contained changes to AS 4615-145A that removed the word person from eligible applicants. In version H, however, this section was removed and the statute reads as it does today, leaving the word person in there. So subsequent sections were renumbered accordingly. Section 40, found on page 22, deals with AS 4615-145, reservation of water. Items were added that the commissioner must consider in determining the proposed reservation is in the public interest. Under 4, beginning A, on line 23, the commissioner must consider the benefit to the applicant. B, the effect of the economic activity. C, the effect on fish and game resources and public recreation opportunities. D, the effect on public health. E, the effect of loss of alternate uses of water. F, harm to another person. And moving on to page 23, F and G were on page 23, the effect upon access to navigable or public water. This language was pulled directly from AS 4615080, criteria for issuance of a permit. It's also found in the regulations for the department under reservation of water. This just puts it right into statute, so it's very clear. And following subsections were renumbered accordingly. Staying on page 23, on section 42, several subsections were added to AS 4615-145, and it explains the treatment of applications. G, beginning on line 15, directs the commissioner to issue any approved certificates for water reservations applied for by a person to the appropriate state agency to ensure that the public entity holds the reservation for a public resource. H grants the commissioner discretion in determining when and in what order to process water reservation applications. It clarifies that the order the application was processed does not affect the priority of the appropriation. I, only the applicant for a water reservation or an agency that holds the reservation may appeal the subsequent administrative decision under AS 4615-145F, and that appeal right may not be transferred or assigned. And J on line 27 clarifies how much data must be submitted before the commissioner can issue a certificate of reservation. It specifies that not less than 5 years of non-proprietary public domain hydrologic data must be collected by or for the applicant to support the application. Subsequent sections were then renumbered accordingly. Section 44 begins on page 24, line 7. A new section was added to read, an applicant under this chapter does not have a property right in the application. Basically, the application itself does not constitute a right. The right can only be attributed once a certificate has been issued by the commissioner. This does not, however, apply to the property right granted through a traditional water right for beneficial use upon certification. And since this is a new section, subsequent sections in the bill were renumbered accordingly. Section 45, also on page 24, is a new section, lines 11 through 12. This adds the words federally recognized tribe to the definition of a person. While DNR currently interprets federally recognized tribes to be included in this definition, this very clearly spells it out. And subsequent sections were also renumbered. Section 48, which used to be section 47, contains transition language for pending applications for reservations of water. Section 48 was changed to require that all applications filed before the effective date of this act will be processed using the provisions of this act. And I'll just briefly read to you what it used to read. The Department of Natural Resources shall return any applications and fees for applications pending as the effective date of Section 42 of this act to persons no longer authorized to reserve water under Section 42 of this act. So now those applications will be processed. Section 48 also clarifies that the transition language pertains to applications filed under AS 4615-145. And finally, new Section 51 was added. This used to be Section 50. It adds provisions of this act take effect immediately, including changes to AS 4615. And Madam Chair, that completes the changes.
Very good. Thank you very much, Lindsay, for going through that. We're now going to invite Wynn Menifee to the table, and Wynn actually has a PowerPoint from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water that you're going to go through, which kind of beefs up some of the changes and explains them. Right, Wynn?
That is correct.
Excellent. So the PowerPoint should be on members' desks. Everybody looks like they've got it. So go ahead and begin, Wynn. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Wynn Menifee, Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water with DNR. And thank you, Madam Chair, and the committee for allowing me to go through this. I'd like to first start out by saying that since last year's work on this bill, we've had a lot of meetings with the public, with different interest groups. Both legislators and the department have reached out to the public and said, what are the concerns? We've done so, and we've worked with legislators to try to come up with the correct language to address the concerns that the public had, and we've incorporated that. So I think we have a good bill that still has a lot of the provisions, good, important things that we're trying to accomplish, but also addresses the concerns that the people brought up. So what I'd like to do is, by going through this presentation here, what I'd like to do is just cover on slide two, I'm going to go through all these different parts of the bill on the basically lumping the provisions of the sectional analysis together where they make sense. And because what we found is the bill's rather lengthy and you've got different parts and pieces, and when we're talking, like, say, for instance, the appeals, we're going to lump all those together, and then we'll talk about that.
Excuse me for a moment, just for clarification, now is when committee members can execute their questions, right? All right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. So what I'll do is I will run through starting right at the beginning of the bill, and then we'll just lump it just as you're seeing on this screen. So I'll go to the next slide, and we'll start with general permits. General permits, we heard very clearly that there was a concern, this is Section 1, that general permits, there was a concern about the notwithstanding clause, and because there was a feeling that the general permits might be used for much more than they were intended to be used for because of the notwithstanding clause. So that's been removed, and not only has it been removed and replaced with just language that says if it conflicts with Title 3804, 3805, or 3895, that's the only places that there might be a conflict. It's specified that that's the issue. Secondly, we can only use a general permit where we can already authorize permits under 3805 or 3895. This really brings the scope of what a general permit can do down to a very narrow group of things that we can apply a general permit to. We've also put in Section 1, the provision that allows the public, one, we'll write a decision on it, we'll allow the public 30 days notice so that they can comment on that, and we also show that it's an appealable decision. We added some clarification about general permits and appeals to make sure people understood that the initial decision for a general permit is appealable. The subsequent actions that people perform under a general permit, the things that are allowable as long as they conform to the general permit, aren't individually appealable. It's just the original general permit. It does not include things like easements, oil and gas, mineral leasing, coal leasing, material sales, or other disposals of state land. General permits can't apply to those. We also changed within the general permit section the area where it talked about significant or irreparable, or it said significant and irreparable harm. If it causes that, you can't use a general permit. We clarified that it included or irreparable harm. And so that's just, we heard that from people that were speaking to this.
I ask you a question about this? Okay, so this query has been made to me, and I'm going to ask you on the public record, What is the definition of unlikely? And when you say irreparable, what time frame are you looking at for the damage, the harm, that is?
Okay, Madam Chair, the when it says unlikely to result in significant or irreparable harm, when we're looking at it, I would say it's in the foreseeable future, because I won't be able to say that we can, with absolute 100% accuracy, predict everything that's ever going to occur. So I can't guarantee you that we'll see all the way down in the future. But for anything that we can foreseeable see that could be harmed by a general permit, that's what we're looking at. And so the significant and irreparable harm, we're just looking at whatever this action may cause. Does it cause that type of harm?
So let me ask you a follow-up on that then. Give me an example of a general permit that would, you would think about, would cause irreparable harm.
It would.
Can you give an example?
Madam Chair, if it would cause irreparable harm, we wouldn't give the general permit. So we can still permit it through a miscellaneous land use permit. We can put provisions in about how they can fix that if it happened. But for instance, if we gave a permit for somebody to bring equipment across some area, and we knew that it was going to cause some impact, but it was going to be repaired, we could give a miscellaneous land use permit for that. However, for a general permit, we would have to show that it's not going to cause significant or irreparable harm. That and if it causes irreparable harm or significant harm, either one of those, you can't do the general permit for it.
Okay, thanks. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just more globally on Section 1. I mean, this section motivated maybe thousands of Alaskans to come out against this bill. I went to a meeting in Anchorage. It was a cold December night, and it was standing room only. I mean, they probably 250 people there, and this people testified and left. More came in. And I'm just wondering whether the department is going to gain more than it loses by continuing to push this idea, whether you don't think it wouldn't be better. I mean, I know you probably can't say this, but I just don't wonder whether it would be better just to jettison the general permit and move on to the other reforms that the bill offers and leave this sort of controversial hot topic for another day.
Senator French, through the chair, I believe that this is a good provision, and the reason why it's a good provision is it's an efficiency measure. And the way that it's constrained down with the changes, it's not what people were saying, oh, you're going to do huge amounts of authorizations for very large projects. It's not going to do that. It's very, very small things. However, if we get repetitive requests for the same type of thing that we always say yes, and we put these parameters around that authorization so that we can say yes, that's a very good candidate for doing a general permit, because you're not going to cost the applicant more money. You're not going to require extra time for them to go through it. It's a very quick process for them to give something that you would normally say yes. You know what the parameters are of stipulations that you would put on that type of authorization. So it's a very good efficiency measure. It's used very commonly by many different agencies. We just didn't have it clarified in our statutes.
And just to follow up on the comment, it may be helpful for us to, because I guess I'm trying to figure out what you're gaining from this versus the system you have in place now. So, and for a lot of folks, permitting issues are abstract. It's just hard to understand where they're going to work. So it might be helpful to come to me or other members of the committee and say, here's a situation where having this revised, redrawn provision on the books would have saved us a huge amount of time and gotten you the exact same result, where we had strong community participation, strong, you know, right of appeal, and strong permitting guidelines. And yet save us all, you know, 6 months of time or 2 months of time or whatever it is.
Senator French, the chair, I can give you an example of where a general permit works. We had a situation on a river where we had many hundreds of mooring buoys that people needed to get permits for. Now, if we required every single person to come in and get a permit, do an application, go through the process of you public notice it, you go out, and they have to pay for that public notice, and then you wait the time, and then you give them the permit. You would have to do that for each and every one of those hundreds of permits. Whereas what we went through and said, all right, we've already decided that if you have a core permit for that mooring buoy, and you're shown that you already have this buoy in place, that we would permit it under these conditions. We put the conditions. People could say, here's your check. I meet all your conditions. We're done. It was a very quick process. We got, in 1 year, we got hundreds of buoys permitted, and for less cost to the applicants, and they were permitted. So that's an efficiency measure where we saved a lot of time both for the applicants and for the department, and we still protected the environment. We still got the things authorized that are supposed to be authorized under state law. So I think it was a really good success story as an example.
Thank you.
Good. Senator Machicki.
And, you know, let me spend a little time on this bill. Faced the hundreds of people in a couple different places and recorded their concerns. They were important to us. A lot of folks want to jettison things because they don't understand what's occurring today and the protection that they will be enjoying by codifying general permits. So aware of the River Buoy Project, there are a lot of uses of general permits. People were concerned because they didn't feel there were sideboards in the original Senate Bill 70 or House Bill 77. Those sideboards exist today. They're clarified under AS 3805 or AS 3895. The notwithstanding language has been removed, which gives the authority back to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to work with you on using their Title 16 codes to make sure that those that criteria is met as well. And I want to thank you for the changes. I really think it's important that we educate ourselves and we help to make Alaskans more aware of the substantive changes in Section 1. And so a couple of questions, and you answered them partially. Can this bill be used as a general permit for a major dam in Cook Inlet or a major resource development project? And I'll throw it out there because people are going to ask it. It'll save them the time for Chewitna or Pebble Mine. I think people are under the impression that you're just going to issue a general permit for some of these major developments, and this clarifies the sideboards. In my view, the way I'm reading this, and we all just, you know, of course, received this today as well, but the way I'm reading this, those sideboards don't allow those major activities, including oil and gas exploration and production, to occur using a general permit.
Senator Michicki, through the chair, that is correct. There may be, in a very large project, maybe some very small portion that might actually fit within a general permit. Let's say we had a stream crossing permit that was under a general permit, and the large project needed to cross that stream. If they fit within the parameter of that, that little portion of their whole big project might fit. But in general, I would say no, it would not work.
In my view, the section of the hundreds of folks that we talked to, and your department was there to listen to them, I believe that you returned protections to Alaskans that they feared went away with the notwithstanding language in Section 1. And I just want to thank you for your hard work in that section. But I do think it's imperative that they understand that they were heard and that you captured it in code. So thank you.
Senator Michicki, through the chair, thank you very much.
I'll let you proceed. It doesn't look like there's any other questions.
Okay. So I'm going to move to the next slide, land lease and sale provisions. And this includes sections 3, 8, 9, 10, 21. These are just clarifications about our land leasing and sale provisions. And essentially, we're raising the threshold of before it said you have to go to the commissioner's approval when you're disposing of state land greater than 5,000. Now we're saying it's 10,000. Prices have gone up since the time that these bill, this act was originally, or the statutes were put in place. We clarified in Section 8 that you can purchase for contract. It's a clarification of something we already do. And then we talked about lotteries and public auctions, that public auctions can be an online public auction as well as outcry auctions. And that's the majority of what you have in that area of the bill. I'll move on to the next slide, extensions and renewals on land and aquatic leases. In this Section 11, Section 15, and 16, these are about renewing or extending leases. Generally, in HB 361, a couple years ago, when that passed, what that was is it said you can renew leases that are done under 070 if somebody's in good standing and you don't exceed the term of the original lease. There was aquatic farming was left out of that because it had a certain renewal statement already in it, but it doesn't match up with what the other part is. So we're just making it consistent with what already passed. And then the other part is an extension. And for a lease where there's a request to purchase it, a request to renew the lease, or they're substantially changing their operation, they may ask for that right at the very end of their lease. We didn't have any provision to keep that lease active while we were adjudicating that request. So with this extension for 2 years gives you the capability of going through that decision process while they're still legitimately authorized to be out there with their lease. And then you make the decision you are or are not going to approve what they've asked for. So that's what I have on that slide.
Madam Chair.
Senator Machiki had a question.
Just a quick one. I just wanted to thank you for that. I mean, this is one of those things that Alaskans are unaware of how important this is to fishermen and shellfish farmers, if you will. I think they're called farmers. They're clearly not ranchers, right? But this is a very important part of the bill. And, again, it's one of the reasons why it does also add to what the code makes available to make lives of many hardworking Alaskans better as well. So thanks for clarifying this section.
Thank you, Senator, through the chair. And just to clarify also that just what we just talked about, no changes from last year. It was the same thing as we had last year. And then I'm going to move to preference right on certain land leases. There was a provision that was placed in during Senate Finance that a preference right was created for people that had leases. And this we did have some changes here, and the changes dealt with and let me start it out by saying this preference right is for a situation where you have municipal entitlement land selections that overlay on top of a lease where we've already leased the land. And now what we've done in the changes is we've clarified that's talking about land leases. I don't think the intention ever was that this included oil and gas leases or something like that, mineral leases. It was where we had land leases, and we clarified that it's for land leases that were offered competitively through 3805070. Now, that preference right, the individual that has the lease, they just to clarify, in a municipal entitlement situation, if that land were to be transferred over to the borough or city, that lease would have to be honored. All the conditions have to be honored on that, but we transfer the lease. It would run out its full term. However, what this does is gives them the opportunity to purchase at the point of the selection. So what we'll do is we'll notify that lessee, according to this, we'll notify the lessee when that selection comes over top of their lease. We'll give them 120 days to tell us whether they'd like to purchase it, and then we'll run through a process to see if they meet all the criteria to purchase that land. And those criteria are that they've been operating for at least 10 years under a lease. They've got 25% of their income for the previous 10 years come from that land, and that they've put a building on there that's at least 500 square feet. And then if we decide if they meet all the criteria, when we dispose of it, we have to do it for fair market value. And the value, because the municipality selected it, most likely for the purposes of revenue, the revenues will be for the borough, subject to appropriation by the legislature. Okay. I will move over to the next slide, and this is dealing with preliminary written findings or decisions. This area has not changed from since last year. The issue here was that we already do preliminary decisions, and that's in a two-step process where you go out and you give the folks a preliminary written decision, let them comment on it, saying this is what we intend to do, and then you make changes if necessary, and you write your final decision. Our statutes did not actually clarify that we should do that. And so what all these changes in Section 3, 17, 18, and 19 were essentially to clarify that, in fact, we may do that. And so that's what it is. It doesn't require that you do it, but you may do that. In addition, in Section 19, we clarified that we wanted to give more notice than what was required, and that was in leasehold location orders, not just mineral closing orders, but in opening orders and other location orders. We want to do the public notice. So that's basically in there also. It requires the public notice. Okay, so I'll move to the next slide, which is about land exchanges. Very important part of the bill. Nothing has changed since last year on this one, but land exchanges are very important, especially with the mixed ownership that we have with municipal entitlements and such. You'll see that as land becomes more complex, more needs to do land exchanges. The current situation with land exchanges is very difficult, almost impossible to do our land exchanges, not under Title 29, the municipal entitlement side of things, but just on general land exchanges. What this does is it clarifies we already do disposals of interest. We'll use the same decision process in 3835, and what it does is it lets us do a best interest decision whether to do the exchange or not. Secondly, if we try to get the exchange as comparable as possible, but if you're not quite on the mark, you can use cash value to even that out. And that's very important because that was one of the big problems of the previous. You would have to try to reappraise and then adjust your lot sizes and everything to try to make it an absolute equal value. Let's see if there's something else here. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. So I'll move to the next slide. And there's actually three slides I'm going to go through. The first two slides I'm going to go rather quickly because the third slide, which is later in the bill, deals with the exact same thing as these appeal slides that I'm about to go through, but there's a lot of sections that it addresses. And let me just clarify that we changed in our statutes, rather than being aggrieved by an appealing, we've changed it to substantially and adversely affected. However, that's seen throughout our statutes. So therefore, we have multiple sections where we had to adjust that. So what you're going to see is, under this first slide, you're going to see section 4, 5, 6. They all have this deal about changing it from substantially and adversely affected from aggrieved. And it doesn't change the intent of the existing statutes. It just changes the wording. And I'm going to go to the next slide. Slide 10. Sections 12, 13, and 14, same deal. And so that's going to take us to the following slide, which is where we clarify this a little bit more, and I'll get into the meat of it here. So under general appeal, yes.
A quick question here. The appeal, a request for reconsideration, yes, that is in section 14 is what it is. It's reduced from...
Okay, excuse me for missing that, saying that, Madam Chair. What that is the other ones all say 20 days for appeal. This one had said 30 days. We're just trying to make it consistent with all the other ones. So all this is about consistency amongst the different sections in Title 38.
Thank you. Senator French, question?
I'm sorry, just on that point on the reduction, was that in last year's bill as well, or is that a new?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
All right, same thing as last year.
Great. Thank you.
So I'm on slide 11. General appeal statute, right now it says that a person, the eligibility to appeal is that somebody has to be aggrieved by. What we found is we found multiple people appealing saying they don't like something, but not giving us any substance to what they are appealing. What we're trying to do is we're trying to clarify that we want them to tell us what it is that's hurting them, or why is it that their interests are hurt in a detrimental way. So what we clarified is that we want them to give us something in writing that says how they're substantially and adversely affected. Secondly, we added a provision in that would allow us to say if we go out for notice for 30 days, and by the way, this is a provision that's already in for disposals of state land. This broadens it out to other types of decisions. But it says if we go out for 30 days and we tell the people, in order to appeal this, you have to meaningfully participate by submitting comments in during the process. The whole reason for this is we have found numerous times where people bring up a point at the end of the process after you've gone through, you've asked for public comment, you've solicited, you've tried to reach out, nobody says anything, and then you make your decision, the company's raring to go, and then at the last moment somebody appeals and says, oh, you got to stop that because I've got this concern that you haven't addressed. And so now we have to go and say, all right, we have to go through the appeal process, but it's late in the game. It's a delay. So we would rather see that right up front because we very much want to address the public's concerns. But we need to hear about those public concerns. So what we're doing is we're shifting that further forward in the process so that we can actually write our decision addressing those concerns. And so that's one aspect. And the 4437-011 is all of – that's our appeal standard for all our decisions, except for over in water, there's a little bit difference in the sense that it says adversely affected goes even a little bit further in saying that appeal decision there that somebody's adversely affected has to show that there's either a physical or a financial detriment to them. And the idea being that water is pervasive through all types of projects throughout Alaska, private, business, all sorts of things. People need water to do their business. It's so important to keep Alaska going that we wanted to make sure that if we're going to have somebody appeal on a water authorization, that they really show their substance and they really show how they're affected. So that's the appeal provisions in a nutshell. Any questions before I move on?
Go ahead and proceed.
Okay, and I'm going to move to the next slide. Just as a quick refresher before I go into the changes that we made in the Water Use Act, everything that follows after this is pretty much Water Use Act, or at least for a couple slides. We issue a couple of different types of authorizations, or three different types of authorizations under the Water Use Act. There's the temporary water use authorizations, which are an authorization to use water, temporary, revocable, never perfects to a water right. It's just that. It's just a revocable authorization to use temporarily the water. Then you have water rights, and there's two different types of water rights. There's the type that you're beneficially using for your purpose, water, and we call it traditional water use, or water right. And the idea is you're either taking water out of the water body for your beneficial use, or you're using the water in the water body for your beneficial use, like a turbine or something like that. Now, there's another type of water right, which is called a reservation of water, and that's to leave the water in the water body. And so those are the three types of water reservations or water authorizations that we do. And you'll see on that slide that I bring some examples of the different types of things that get authorized: ice bridge crossings, ice roads, ski resorts, snowmaking, village landfills, sewer water projects, personal use hydroelectric projects. So there's a whole bunch that depends on water. I'm going to move to the next slide. And let's go into the water reservations for a moment. This was a section that got a lot of attention last year. And last year, what we had in the bill was that we removed the person's ability to apply for a water reservation. And the reason why we had done that is we have started to see what might be a tactic of people to use a water reservation as a tool to delay projects. Well, water reservations by themselves is not a bad thing. It's just we didn't want the reservations used as a tool. So therefore, what we did was we removed that. But we heard very loud and clear from the public, not a good idea, because people saw that as taking away their ability to say that we want this reserved. Okay, so what the change has done from that last version to now is we're putting persons back in. Anybody can apply for a water reservation. We went further because a lot of Native groups were concerned that we weren't including them. We specifically said federally recognized tribes are defined as part of person. We recognized them before as part of persons, but nonetheless, we just clarified that. The idea is anybody can apply, but now we've put a few sideboards on that to make sure that it's not used as a tool for a delay. And so some of the things that we put in were, for instance, that we said that the commissioner has the discretion to determine what order in which to adjudicate these things, if he's going to do this one versus that one first. Another is that we clarified that when somebody submits a water reservation application, they have to submit 5 years of hydrologic data that's been in the public domain or collected for them. And the idea being that they don't just copy and paste something that they found somewhere that, you know, if it's in public domain, it's a different story. But another thing is that we made sure that the applicant that applies for a water reservation has the ability to appeal the decision on that. And that's really important, especially in persons, because we did make one substantive change that said that if a person applies, rather than granting the water reservation to that person, it's granted to the appropriate state agency. We made it clear last year that what we wanted to do is make sure that a public water reservation for a public resource is held by a public agency. And this does that. It doesn't deny the people to apply. It just makes sure that it's held by a state agency. However, the applicant that originally applied will still have the ability to appeal that. And secondly, if we ever make a change on that water reservation, reducing the amount or restructuring the reach that it applies to, they still, even though they were the applicant and they're not holding the water reservation, they still have a right to appeal that. So we clarified they still have due process in this. And the water reservation adds a couple other things. An important thing that we worked with legislators on was the, in fact, Senator Michicki, is that putting in a clarification of what decision criteria do we use in making our decision for water reservation. We added that right up in the statute. We had those before, but people didn't see that, and so there's confusion. There's very clear criteria on that.
Where is that part?
That's in Section 40 of the bill. You'll see that there's... Let me find, yeah, is it 22?
Yes.
Yes, page 22, and you'll see it starting down there on, well, it's actually section 40 starts in page, line 12, and when reserving the water applied to under the section, it'll go through that you have to look at rights of prior appropriators, applicant demonstrated the need, there's a unappropriated water available, and the proposed reservation is in the public interest. But in determining that public interest, you have to do A through G, all those different criteria that you have to consider. So that includes the effect on fish and game resources, the effect of economic activity, the effect on public health, the effect of loss of alternative uses of water. And so it includes a lot of different things that we have to consider. We already always did have to consider that, but now it just puts it right up in the front. We have to consider that.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what I want to get on the record in here is that we do, you know, we have these equal goals as Alaskans. We want to develop our natural resources, and that's, you know, your job in DNR. But, you know, as Alaskans, we're fierce environmentalists. We really want to protect this beautiful state that we live in, especially, you know, as mothers, because we have these children that we want to go on and live and have those opportunities to recreate and fish. And so I think a lot about our salmon and our beautiful habitat. And one of the things that we tend to use these examples about these overzealous litigants, and there are overzealous litigants. But we also need to use the flip side, which is the overzealous corporations that come in from outside, capital O, and, you know, frankly, mercantilism, you know, want to take the resource and whip it up out of here as quickly as they can and leave behind almost nothing, and we're the worst for it. And so I'm equally concerned about them when you look at these water reservations and the fact that they're going to there's no longer a priority status, and so they're going to come to you, and now it's up to the commissioner, and we hope we have a good one. We're relying on that individual and their uncorruptibility to look at, you know, what is the right decision there to make that water reservation for the benefit of Alaskans. And so I put that on the record too, that I'm more worried about them than I am actually about the individual Alaskan. And I want that on the record because I think it is so important to think about those future streams and how they run and how they feed into other places and also the foreseeability of that. That when you're looking at these large general permits and you want to say it's this huge mine or this huge dam, and these are projects that we all agree we want, we understand that we're going to develop our state and move forward, that, you know, looking through a crystal ball 40 years into the future, there's a whole lot to think about. And I am deeply concerned. I still am concerned about this bill. I have deep concerns about it. I have deep concerns about the idea of a general permit where there's this one opportunity to testify and everything is sort of under it, and then you don't get a shot to come back when all these other uses come back. You know, I love the idea that it's messy, that Alaskans get to come forward and line up in these chairs and we sit through it. So I just put that on the record. I appreciate the work that Senator Michicki did, but this senator sits here nervous about the fact that there could be an abuse of the process. There could be an administration, frankly, that's the other way, that's lopsided the other side and is too pro-environmental and, frankly, gives out because there's no longer a process that works this way and gives out too many permits the other way. So I just I just put on the record, I appreciate that there are the considerations that are here in the record, but the general permit notion to me is just one that I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around. So,
Senator McGuire, through the chair, appreciate your comments. There were two things mixed in with what you just said. You talked a little bit about reservations, a little bit about general permits. They're not the same, just to make clear, and that you're correct. These decisions, when we do it, like for instance, what we were just talking about in reservations about doing a best interest decision, they're weighty decisions, and therefore the criteria there are there for a purpose, so that we do protect the fish and game habitat, and we do try to make sure that we consider the other uses that are out there that and the foreseeable uses, so that we don't do something that's going to hurt the state. On general permits, you made a reference that the general permits are for big, huge general permits, and I think what we've done in the constraining of the general permits has shown that they're not going to be for big, huge things, but very small things, because of the way we've necked it down to only permits. The big, huge things are done by leases and other larger authorizations. The general permits don't affect that anymore. We weren't intending that they would affect that, but it's clarified that it can't affect those larger projects like that. So I think it's I think you're absolutely right. We have to make sure that we make good decisions as we go forward.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I just for the other senator over there, very much appreciate your comments. That was the original language in the general permits was a concern to all of us, and I don't think it was the intent originally of the department for it to be that wide open. So I am appreciative of the sideboards, and I think it does define them a general permit for smaller projects as you would envision. And we don't typically, coming back to the water reservations, we don't typically repeat code as we did in this case. But what's very important is that everyone's remains focused on how the commissioner determines what's in the public interest before water is reserved. And I think if you read these line by line, I think it captures the key. And I'm not sure it's just mothers that are concerned about their kids. I'll have to check with some dads I know. But I think it does clarify quite clear what kinds of things are considered. And I, again, I know it's redundant placing it in to this bill, but the struggle's about this bill. And this has made me a lot more comfortable on the things that about which you commented. So,
just one second. I'd like to call Randy Bates to the table. He's with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I think he might be helpful in clarifying their role in this kind of permitting and evaluative process. Welcome, Mr. Bates. If you'll put yourself on the record, you might have some valuable input here.
Yeah, good afternoon. For the record, Randy Bates, Director of Habitat, Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Randy.
Very simply, House Bill 77 does not diminish or lessen fish and game protections as it relates to fish and fish resources. We retain separate, independent authority under Title 16 to provide those protections for fish, habitat, and the fish resources. Simple as that. The Division of Habitat is the primary agency that permits activities for the Department of Fish and Game, and we have two primary functions. One is to issue fish habitat permits for activities that occur within resident fish streams and also anadromous water bodies. And the second primary function is to permit activities that occur in special areas, legislatively designated special areas around the state. Mendenhall Wetlands, State Game Refuge, Anchorage Coastal Refuge, other areas along those lines. Is there, Madam Chair, is there something specific I can provide for the committee at this point that will help the conversation?
Well, let me ask Senator McGuire. Did you have questions along these lines?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate you being here, Mr. Bates. I was going to ask you the question, so thank you. Does Fish and Game currently have the ability, under the definition of a person, to apply for one of these water reservations if they believe that one of these areas is important to Alaska's fish habitat?
Senator McGuire, through Madam Chair, the answer is yes, we have, we did, we are, we will. we are the recipient and the applicant of record, all of the above. We will continue to apply for those reservations and work with DNR.
Yes,
we are considered a person under the definition, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then my second question is on page 22, line 27, which has put in the findings, which was already a part of regulation, mm-hmm. that the commissioner must consider in determining the public interest. Item C requires that the commissioner look at the effect on fish and game resources. And I'm wondering whether or not that involves a requirement that the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources consult with the Department of Fish and Game, and specifically the Habitat Division. And the reason I ask that is just simply that you may have a commissioner that has a background in biology and fish habitat and so on, but you may not. And I'd just like to hear on the record a conversation about what that particular commissioner's analysis is going to look like, and I'm hoping that it involves a specific requirement of a conversation with Fish and Game.
Right. Senator, through the chair, although it doesn't specifically say right here that you have to consult with them, the understanding has always been, and I'm sure always will be, that Fish and Game is the expert on the fish and the game and their habitat. DNR folks are not, and so therefore we absolutely depend on Fish and Game. Every single application, whether it comes from Fish and Game or not, we go to Fish and Game and we take their consultation, because we need the experts in the field, in the state agencies, of who that expert is to tell us, is this true when they say that this reach of the river needs to be protected for a fish habitat for these reasons? We go to Fish and Game. They're the ones that the experts that will tell us, is that true or not?
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Machicki.
I just had two questions. So, and just to clarify, although I know it was never the intent of the department, the notwithstanding language was concerning in the general permits originally. I know your intent was to continue regulating under Title 16, however legally you could have been trumped in a court of law. I think we've clarified that, put some sideboards as needed, and I think that'll make a lot more people necessary. But just for an example, I don't know if the public knows this, but so you'll hear me talk a little bit about the 12 important rivers and other waters to sustain the abundance and productivity of Chinook salmon. And just, I mean, these are the rivers that grow 90% to 95% in the main stem streams, not counting tributaries of the salmon in the state. And the state holds the reservations in six of those rivers, if I'm correct. And that's the Stikine, the Taku, the Copper, the Kenai, Karluk, and the Nooshiegak. So they've done some studying of necessary in-stream water flows in these primary streams. I assume the department holds the reservation.
Senator, through the chair, on those rivers, I think I can't say absolutely sure without going to every individual one, but the primary, I think, is Fish and Game on those. I just can't guarantee you that every single one. There might be some that was issued to BLM or something, but I think they're all Fish and Game.
Thank you.
Great. Senator French, did you have a question?
I'll let it pass. Okay. Yeah, I'll let it pass.
Right. Any other questions? Great. All right. I'll let you go ahead and proceed.
Hey,
thank you very much, Madam Mr. Bates. We'll call you up again if we need you. All right, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Randy. Okay, Madam Chair, there were a couple things I didn't quite cover on reservations. I'll just finish that up, and that's one that it states in a transition language in Section 48 that all the pending applications that we have will be for water reservations will be done under the provisions of this act.
Sorry, under the provisions of the new act or the act, the law as it stands now?
The new act. The new provisions. Yeah.
If I've got an application, it's been waiting in line, it's been waiting for some time, the rules that I've been working under are now new rules with respect to this act.
Senator, Chair, the issue is that the new provisions will prevail. That's what you would make the decision under. You don't lose any priority date of your application. You don't lose the fact that you applied and you did all this work to gather data. All that still gets included. The only difference is, let's say under the old provision, technically we could have issued a reservation to a person. We would not be able to now because the provision said it has to be issued to an appropriate state agency. So if we adjudicated an application from a person, we will issue that to an appropriate state agency. So that's the type of thing that you'll see it under the new provision of the Act.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Could I ask you a question, quick, Wynn? You just said it would be held by a state agency, and please correct me, I thought municipalities could also hold it. It wouldn't have to be a state agency, but it could be a local governmental agency?
I will check, but I think you're going to find that it's in Section 42, and I think it says appropriate state agency.
Oh, you're right.
Yes, it's appropriate state agency.
Thanks very much. Senator Machiki, did you have a question?
Well, sort of. So through the chair, I think it's important when you talk about the changes, can you tell me how many individual persons or groups have been successful in having a water reservation adjudicated, to your knowledge?
Senator, through the chair, we have issued no reservations to persons to this date.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that folks are not losing ground. They have the same ability to apply, and the only difference is that the state, an appropriate state agency, will possess the water reservation. Mm-hmm. There's one other thing, Madam Chair. There's an improvement in the bill. At least the way I see it is an improvement, is that the change does not require the department to review every 10 years. So the way that I see that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that a water reservation will likely not have pressure to be removed. They're likely to have longer standing than they currently do, where you might see some risk in maintaining a water reservation now. You'll likely not even look at those rivers unless there's a pending project or other use of that water.
Senator Machiki, through the chair, I think you stated that very well. The situation is that before we were required every 10 years to look at the water reservation, reevaluate if all the facts were the same and it still warranted a reservation. At this point, that's a lot of work. And so this is just saying that we can look at a reservation, but we don't need to. We've got enough to do with the new reservations that unless something big happens to that river, some huge change, like maybe a dam had gone in or something changed the dynamics of the river, it's going to be very unlikely that we're going to go back to these things very often, and therefore it will save us a lot of time. And if we don't go back to them, you're absolutely correct. The reservation will continue on into the future.
Senator French, question?
And remind me how many reservations there are pending, private reservations, applications are pending with the department, and maybe tell me how long they've been pending.
Senator, through the chair, right now we have 202 applications that we've received. 181 of those are applications that are complete. They actually have the information we need to make the adjudication. We have issued certificates for 89, and that's at least 25 since last year that we were speaking. So we're actively going along the line here. So 89 certificates issued, and we've actually closed six of those because either the applicant withdrew or whatever. So, yes.
Yes, follow-ups.
I have a cold, so maybe I'm misunderstanding. I thought a few minutes ago you told us that there had been no private reservations accomplished under state law.
Senator, the chair, did I misunderstand the question? Because what I just gave you was the information for all reservations, not just private ones.
Okay, I meant private ones.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Apologize for.
I think I misstated the question.
Okay. So right now we have 35 applications from private entities, and of those 35, we have issued zero.
And how long have they been pending, and how many are complete?
The oldest one, Senator, through the chair, the oldest one was in 1992, and the majority of them come in past 2007. So the vast majority come after 2009. So of those 35, the most of them are very recent.
Are they complete?
Comparatively compared to the statehood.
And are they complete applications?
Not necessarily so, Senator.
How many of them are, if you know?
Senator, through the chair, I would not be able to answer that at this point in time. That's something I'd have to get back to you because some of them haven't finished their data collection, some of them in the midst of that, and you'd have to look at every single application and go through that.
Do you think there should be some, once you have a completed application for a private water reservation, do you think there should be some reasonable time in which the department acts on it?
Senator, through the chair, I think that the reasonable amount of time, well, obviously, is in the eye of the beholder, but nonetheless, there's the issue that we have this backlog of 202, and we can't get them all done in a year. So inevitably, you're going to have to go through, and we work with Fish and Game to help prioritize what do you think is the most important for Fish and Game matters. Remember that a reservation can be applied for navigation purposes, for recreation, for water quality, or fish and game habitat. Vast majority of these are done for fish and game habitat. So therefore, we work with Fish and Game to help us prioritize and say, for fish and game habitat protection, what is the most important? And then from that, we prioritize our things. So if there's a reservation that has come in, let's say in 1992, and there's others that are a higher priority, maybe higher risk that they might get hurt in some form or fashion, it's better to work on the ones that have the higher risk.
Follow-up, Senator French?
I guess I'll just make a comment, which is if they're not good applications, if they're not in the public interest, deny them and move on to the next one. It just seems like it almost seems like this is some sort of weird joke to have this application process on the books that never results in the awarding of a reservation. 35 private applications, zero awarded. I'm almost amazed we're spending as much time as we are on this since it's never happened yet in state history.
Senator, through the chair, as of yet, there's always been a higher priority. Person's application doesn't necessarily mean it's the highest priority, but we have been actively doing reservations. It's, in our view, it's not a joke. We actually see there's a very good reason to do reservations. They do take a lot of time to go through their scientific basis of study, and you have to research all those criteria to make sure that you're making the best interest. You're making a long-term commitment to lock up water in a state that nobody else can use. So it's a very important decision that you have to go through. So therefore, we give it the due diligence. We've worked very diligently to speed up our process. In this last year, we issued 27 of these things, or 25 with two in this year. But nonetheless, we have sped up. If you look at the history and all the ones we've ever issued, we are going a lot faster now because we see the importance of it. But it is going to take us time to go through the backlog.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dyson, question?
Yeah, thank you. Hope my question is foolish. What happens when reservation permits have all been given and something happens in a natural habitat? As you know, in the subarctic, virtually all rivers in the flat country go about the business of meandering, sometimes get, you know, long, long ways out of what the riverbed was when the permit was granted. Or we've had places on the backside of my area, Lake George, glacier comes down and dams up a lake. Sometimes it's seasons before it breaks through and pretty spectacular. Or landslides. And certainly in my district, the Aklutna people have had to deal with not their people, other people coming in and turning a river or a large stream that's right next to a road into a dump, including pirate sewage pumpers, you know, and so on and so forth. And so there's things that are out of control of you all and certainly out of control of whoever owns the permit. Just talk to me a little bit about what happens in those circumstances.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the situation of water reservations where you have a river that has changed course or something like that, the water reservation is going to stay with the reach of the river, even though there's accretion and reliction of moving that river because there's a natural meander that occurs. We describe it by reach, and as long as it's just moving over, and even if it moves over half a mile, it's going with that. Okay. The avulsion is a different story. An avulsion is where you actually have a complete new river. Essentially, your rock slide issue dams off the river; it goes the other way, you know, completely. You might get into a situation there where you have to reconsider, and that is why there's a provision in 4615-145F that says you might have to reevaluate this. This 10-year review, instead of doing the 10-year review, we may have to review it on something like that and say, does the purpose for the reservation still exist? If something so fundamentally has changed, like, for instance, you gave an example, and I'll make it worse than your example, the dumping sewer. They dumped hydrochloric acid into it, okay, and killed everything that's possible in that river body, and you made that reservation to protect the habitat. Well, then the question that we're going to have to consult with Fish and Game is, well, is there habitat still to protect? Is the purpose still there that warranted the reservation in the first place? And you'd have to go through that decision process. So changes can happen out there, out of our control. And do we have a provision in the bill that are actually in existing statutes that allows us to address that? Yes. But it's going to be a rare situation.
I hope. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last area of questioning. On page 24, lines 1 through 6, this is the area that talks about the power that's given to the commissioner. So it says, notwithstanding any contrary provision of this chapter, the commissioner may authorize the temporary use of a significant amount of water as determined by the department by regulation, for a period of time not to exceed 5 consecutive years in each authorization, if the water applied for has not been appropriated in accordance with this chapter. The commissioner may issue one or more new temporary water use authorizations for the same project. So these are the temporary water use authorizations. So I look at this provision, and as I read it, it's a tremendous amount of authority. We're saying the commissioner can issue them, and it can be determined by the department by regulation, so the legislature has no authority. Each one of them can last up to 5 consecutive years, and I don't see a limit to how long each one of those extensions can go, and I see that at least one or more can be issued for each project, and I don't see a limit on gallonage. So my question is, you know, how big are we talking about in terms of sort of exposure on these temporary water permits, and what would prevent an applicant from just going that route? Let's say you got a commissioner that were particularly favorable to a project, and that applicant, let's say the public weren't particularly favorable to them. They were having a hard time in the public or whatever, or let's say the legislature weren't particularly favorable. And so the idea would be kind of skirt the regular process, the water reservation process, because that was too hard, and just go this temporary water route process and get all the water you need.
Senator, through the chair, you have a few questions there, and I'll try to see if I hit all of them. Okay, if I don't, tell me. The first thing, let's just clarify. Temporary water use authorization is just that, it's temporary. It's revocable and never perfects into a water right. So keep that in mind to start with. The second thing is that when I say revocable, at a moment's notice, we can say, no, you can't use any more water. But this clarification here that you said, what keeps it from just being renewed? There is no renewal of a temporary water use authorization. It's saying that, first of all, it does not exceed 5 years. That's the longest we can issue a temporary water use authorization is 5 years, period. However, what this clarifies is that At the end of that five-year period, which is, this happens, is a project applies and says, I need 5 years' worth of water to do this project. Their project doesn't quite get done in those 5 years. It's a seven-year project. Right. They can come back at the end of those 5 years, and they can say, I need three more years or two more years of a water use, or 5 more years of a water use authorization. We can't issue it longer than 5 years. We're still required to start from scratch, reevaluate it, and we still are required to go to Fish and Game on a temporary water use authorization, consult with them, get their input, and to protect the fish habitat. And then we make a decision based upon other water rights that are out there and such to protect them. We say, okay, we're going to go ahead and issue this much water for this project. These types of water use authorizations are used by DOT for, let's say, the GVA wind tower project, for things like ice roads on the North Slope. I mean, water use authorizations are used throughout Alaska for development projects, for small projects. It's just saying, I need to take this much water from this stream temporarily. I don't need a water right that's going to last forever. I just need it for while I'm constructing. And so the idea being is you don't need to lock it down forever and give them a perpetual right. All you need is to just allow them to use it temporarily. We do look at existing water rights. We look at existing water reservations. We look at other foreseeable uses. So we go through a diligent process, but it's renewed. When I say renewed, you have to relook at it every 5 years from scratch.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, I'm not comfortable with that particular language. We can talk, but I mean, I think, you know, that's the whole point. You've worked with Senator Machicki to, you know, come up with some very clear language, which is on the page prior, 22, about, you know, the kinds of things that really have to be considered. And that's great, but then we have this provision on 24, which, again, the notwithstanding language, notwithstanding any contrary provision of this chapter, there it crops up again, and it basically just guts it. And here we are back to this notion of discretion of the commissioner, and, oh, by the way, not to exceed 5 years, but we can do it one or more times again, and I just don't think that there's protection there for the public. And then we're right back to square one, where you don't have that public process, you don't have people feeling like they're part of the process. And I think that was the whole backlash about the bill from the very beginning, is how do Alaskans feel? Do they feel like they're being trusted to be a part of this dialogue? And, you know, right here on page 24, you're just taking it out again. And so I'm going to look at the language and see what I can do, but absolutely there needs to be a limitation. You can't just say 5 years and, oh, by the way, it can just continue to go on and on and on and not have to apply through that regular process by which you've negotiated a way to do that, in my opinion.
Senator McGuire, through the chair, just to clarify, the notwithstanding provision there, that was in existing law. It's not something we just inserted in. That's already there. The legislature before had determined that this is a small type of use. I won't say small in the sense of quantity, but a revocable, non-long-term authorization. And the legislature saw fit to create this type of program, and we're not changing what the legislature had already said. All we're changing is a clarifying that some people have said, well, does that mean you can do it more than once to the same location? And we're clarifying, yes, you can do it more than once. And I think that we have all the protections to still evaluate that, and I would encourage you to look at our regulations, because we do in regulations show that you have to consider multiple different things, but it's not right up here in the statute.
Okay, just my last point, Madam Chair, but what you are adding is the fact that you can issue one or more new temporary water use authorizations for the same project, which in my opinion takes away any incentive whatsoever to go through the regular process, in my opinion, because if the commissioner wanted, that commissioner could just continue to extend that process out.
Wynn, I want to just clarify that I understand the temporary water use permit. If I'm not mistaken, a ski resort who is making snow every winter has a temporary water use permit. You mentioned a road construction project, which may go past 5 years. You mentioned ice roads. you mentioned municipal sewer and water projects as well. These are common, everyday private citizens who need a temporary water use permit. Am I understanding that correctly?
Senator Giesel, you're correct in the fact that all sorts of sizes of individuals or companies use these. The key point is when somebody applies, because of the statutes the way they're written, they make a determination. Do I need this in perpetuity? That's the key question right there. If I need it in perpetuity, then I want a water right. And the reason why I want a water right is I want to ensure that I'm locked in to always have that, and I'm going to bump anybody in the future. I have the primary right. Okay, so that's why they apply for a water right. Temporary water use doesn't bump anybody. So if a ski company, let's say, for instance, says, I need this water to put snow on the mountain, they're probably going to go for a water right. And the reason why they're going to do that is they don't want somebody coming along a week later and applying for a water right and then taking away their business because they can't get water. So that's the process that the applicants are going through, is determining how long do I need this water for. If it's a long term, I need it 50 or more years or whatever, I need a water right. If I just need it for maybe a year, 2 years, even 7 years or something like that, they're usually thinking temporary water use authorization because I don't need it long term.
Just an additional comment. You know, a lot of the folks in my district have a water right. They have a private well on their lot, and so they have that on-site water right. Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I have comments, Madam Chair. Thank you. A couple of comments, and this is to try to help. The section that we're referring to on page 22 has really nothing to do with the section we're referring to on page 24. The 22 is a water reservation. Page 24 is a temporary water use permit. And just really what it is a clarification. They have a right to do that today on a temporary water use permit. And from being in industries that use both water rights and water use permits, I have to agree that someone who is going to invest substantially in a project is not going to ask for a temporary water use permit. They're going to look for a water right. But they had the, in my view, the line they added, may issue one or more new temporary water use authorizations for the same project, is not something that couldn't have done before. They had the right to do it before. I think they're simply clarifying it. There's really no change in that section. Some folks may say they might want to be notified when a new temporary water use permit is issued for the same project. But again, it's likely going to be for a short, just slightly longer than that initial 5 years. And again, if you think about, I mean, we talk about investments and what you're going to take for risk. You could get a brand new commissioner that comes in the middle of your temporary water use permit. You've made a substantial investment. They could revoke that right tomorrow. If you have a significant project or investment, you're likely going to go for a water right.
Thank you. Wynn, there's a couple more pages you have, and we're running tight on time, so maybe you want to cover those.
All right. Madam Chair, I'll just do that. So a couple of changes. I'm on slide 15, and I'll move it over there. One more. This is there was an issue that we did on section 35, and that was just to make sure that people that are moving small quantities, not significant quantities of water, from one hydrologic unit to another, they're not violating the law. We didn't want people to carry a water bottle across a hydrologic unit to get a misdemeanor. So this is large quantities of water. So section 36, this just says that we're going to prepare a public notice on a proposal of sale of water or removal of water once the commissioner determines that the application is ready for decision. We get a lot of applications in that are not ready for decision. They're incomplete applications. We're not going to go out to notice on them until they're ready. We removed a certified mail issue that wasn't necessary. The temporary water use authorization, we just talked all about that in Section 43. Section 44, we clarified that an application does not vest a property right in an individual. It's actually the issuing of a permit or certification that does that. And then I already mentioned that we added in the definition for persons, federally recognized tribes. Two other, let me go to the next slide. Chicumenic Lake, that was added last year, and Chicumenic Lake is just allowing a feasibility study for a hydro project at Woodtichick State Park. And it talks about making it consistent with the management plan just to do the feasibility study. And then we also added a definition clarification of state land just because of the way it was stated, shorelands and tidelands. We just clarified that. Section 28, this is actually a very big one, but it's right at the end here, is a little thing. Subdivision plats, where it's an unorganized borough. We are the unorganized borough. DNR manages the unorganized borough. And in an unorganized borough, you have an issue that if somebody comes in and says, I want to do a subdivision of my property, there's no easements on it. There's nothing that would affect anybody else in the public. They just want to divide it in half. They have to go through all this public notice and all these other aspects, which nobody ever comments on. Nobody ever says they have a problem because it's just a person's own property they're doing something with. So what happens is we just cost more and we delay more by going through that way. So what we've changed is we says in that situation where it's private and there's none of these easements or anything like that, then it doesn't require you to go through the public notice on that. Section 46 is just the repeal provisions, and that was, as we went through the bill, sometimes you have to take out a section to move something over. And then there's transition language, which we talked about, but and effective dates of the bill. And that hasn't really – there's a little bit of change in the effective date just for the Water Use Act to make sure it's immediately effective. That's it.
Good. Any further questions for Wynn? Yes, Senator Machicki.
Quick one. This is just a kind of philosophical thing, but I think it's important. And we perhaps in the future we'll look at this. I don't think we will in this bill. But pending applications, a huge proportion of them are federal applications for wilderness waterways that will not have a competing use perhaps ever or for generations. And you carry them on your list, so it looks like you got a pile of them. Why do we not have a category that says these are adjudicated as not having a likely competing use, reapply if, or you'll have a standing someday if there's a competing use, to take them off and get to the reasonable amount that you actually, of the applications that you actually have on the books that you'll likely act on? I don't think it's irresponsible. I think it demonstrates that you have a reasonable backlog of applications.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, there's not any provision in statute to make that call the way that you just explained it. However, we can always represent that backlog in two different ways, but we don't have a way to ignore and turn it back, reject it for those reasons.
All right. Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Menefee, for taking us through the bill. We have reached the end of our time today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 12th. We're going to continue our consideration of HB 77 by taking public testimony. So folks that are interested in testifying, let me kind of lay out the plan. Public testimony will be from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Go to your local legislative information offices. We are asking you to go through the LIO because we have a limited number of phone lines, and the more people that call in independently, it degrades the quality of the audio, and we can't understand what people are saying. So to get the best clarity, go to your local LIO. Testimony will be limited to 2 minutes. If you don't get to publicly, verbally testify on Wednesday, we will always take testimony in writing. So it would be probably a good idea to prepare your testimony in a written form. We will attach your written testimony to the bill file so that as the bill goes forward and people click on the documents related to this bill, your testimony, your letter, will be called out as an individual item. Actually may get more highlight than speaking it verbally here. And remember that your testimony must pertain to version H, the CS that is before us. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting. The time is 5:06 p.m.